"We're not going to need the entire navy for the invasion of Coruscant," Caleb replied. "Enough to provide security for the invasion transports, of course, and enough light units to provide the flank security we'll need and to blockade Hector's ports. But no matter how hard he's been working on replacing his navy, he can't have any more than a handful of ships, yet. It's partly because of the need to keep that from changing that I refuse to be diverted from Coruscant at this point. We, on the other hand, have over 50 galleons in commission by now. I imagine we could let you have 20 or 30 of them for something besides invading Coruscant, Brian. I'm thinking we should hand them over to Admiral Rockpoint and tell him to go remonstrate with Farraid. He can have a few marines, too. Enough to pretty much burn the entire waterfront district of Farraid to the ground, let's say." Caleb's voice had gone iron hard once more with the last sentence. Even so, it was warmer than the brown eyes looking levelly into Lock Island's. "I want no counter-massacre here, Brian. Be sure all your captains understand that. Justice against those we know are guilty, yes, but I don't want our people provoked into anything that could even be called a counter-massacre. I don't doubt that even if we managed to refrain from injuring a single soul, the group of four would announce we'd raped and murdered half the city. In the end, though, the truth is going to get out. When it does, I want it to bite Clintan on the arse, not us. But having said that, I also don't want a single unburned ship floating in that harbour or a building standing within 2 miles of that waterfront. Is that understood?"
"Yes, Your Majesty,"
Lock Island said formally, without a trace of levity. "Good. I also want all of our captains and all of our privateers to understand that it's hunting season for anything flying the Delphiraken flag. Again, make it clear I will tolerate no unnecessary brutality or vengeance killing. But I don't want a single Delphirak flag merchant ship anywhere on the seas of Safehold 2 months from today."
"Yes, Your Majesty,"
Lock Island repeated. "If it should turn out that any of the other realms have treated our people the way Delphirak has, they'll receive the same treatment one port city at a time. In the meantime, though, we need to be concentrating our primary effort on Coruscant and Hector. So, since we have you and General Chairman both present, what can you tell us?"
"Mainly that so far we're on schedule, Your Majesty. The transports are collecting now, although if we've lost as many merchantmen as we may have to this new move by the group of four, it could put a crimp into our plans. Aside from that possibility, I don't see any significant problems. The troop strength should reach the required level on schedule, at any rate."
If I might, Your Majesty," Prince Snarman said, raising one plump hand in a polite, attention-seeking gesture.
"Yes, Your Highness," Caleb replied.
"I simply wish to say, first, that I agree wholeheartedly with the priorities you've just established, and, second, that I've had a certain amount of correspondence with Grand Duke Tomas."
"What sort of correspondence?" Caleb asked, his eyes narrowing intently.
"It was purely of an exploratory nature, you understand, between myself as Prince of Emerald and him as the Grand Duke of Zebediah," Narman said in a self-deprecating tone. "As such, it was, of course, well before Emerald became a territory of the Empire. In fact, it began well before the recent unpleasantness the Knights of the Temple Lands demanded of Her Grace and me. It's continued since, however, until quite recently, in fact."
"I see." Caleb kept his eyes on Narman, Charlian noticed. Earl Greyharbor, on the other hand, glanced at Caleb rather than the Emeraldian prince. Or perhaps not. For just a moment, the First Counselor's eyes actually seemed to slip past the Emperor instead.
"And the nature of this correspondence was?"
Caleb continued, before she had any time to consider that possibility, and the question promptly refocused her own attention fully upon Narman.
"As I say, it was of an exploratory nature," Narman repeated. "Nonetheless, I suspect from some of the points we discussed that it's entirely possible he might be prepared to be rather more reasonable than you and your advisers may have been assuming. In fact, I believe it's entirely possible he might be open to the possibility of providing Admiral Lock Island and General Chairman with a forward base much closer to Coruscant than, say, Chisholm.
I see, Caleb said slowly. He cocked his head to one side, considering his younger brother's father-in-law-to-be thoughtfully. Then he nodded.
I'll want to be more fully informed on that previous correspondence of yours, Your Highness. I believe, however, that if the possibilities you've suggested actually exist, it could prove quite valuable.
Narmon said nothing. Instead, he inclined his head in a half-bow of assent.
Very well, Caleb said then, with an air of finality, as he laid his palms flat on the council table and pushed his chair back from it. I believe that completes our business for the day, gentlemen.
There was a general rumble of agreement. Of course, there always was, Merlin thought, and wondered what would happen if one day one of Caleb's counselors disagreed with him instead.
In that case, the Emperor continued, I'll ask you all to excuse Her Grace and me. We have an appointment with the survivors from Farad.
His mouth tightened briefly, then his nostrils flared as he stood, extending his hand to Charlian to assist her to her feet.
I hope they'll take a certain comfort from learning that Delphirac and Farad will soon learn the error of their ways. At any rate, I'll take a great deal of comfort from telling them so.